Blog Talk Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome to the George Brew Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Sorry for the little bit of technical difficulties we had. If you're trying to follow along, please do. Good show lined up tonight. The great Jim Haig will be joining us momentarily, I believe. The coach Tony Nardini will be joining us in about, 15, 20 minutes from now. So you guys are in for a treat tonight. I love having these guys on. I love having Tony on because the sports debate that me and him can have, which there are times I really wish that me and him would just broadcast, would record what we're doing and just play it, because it makes me laugh so hard the way we go and go back and forth with each other. You get us both, like me and him go to devil games. I've known Tony since I was knee-high to a poodle. Very young in my days of playing Little League baseball, and Tony was my first manager in the minor leagues up there at Pershing Field up in Jersey City. But Tony's been a tremendous friend to not only me, but my entire family. So it's a good time. You guys will enjoy. I hope you guys enjoy listening to me and him, especially if we start getting like older stuff where we start just giving each other crap, which is always good because there's piles and piles of it. You never know, maybe. I don't know who will join tonight. Brian is traveling today because he promised his wife something and he's got to pay up on it. So enjoy the cherry blossoms, bud. One of the true wonders of the East Coast. Thank you to whoever brought him over. And if you want to smell cherry blossoms, just go to like Bed Bath and Bath and Body Works and buy that, you know, stuff. I've really kept up on the college basketball tonight. Anybody that listens knows that once my teams are up, I really don't care until the finals. With Duke losing Sunday, with Rhode Island losing Sunday, with Cincinnati losing Sunday, all guys I knew, Teen Hall losing Friday afternoon.
They lost too.
Which means George doesn't give a damn. But you know, we'll get to that point. We'll talk some college hoops. We'll talk about the man who, honestly, has done more to, I don't know, hurt or help his kids more than anybody else, and that's Lonzo Ball's dad. I mean, this guy, you know what? At the end of the day, you start to feel bad for his kids because he's just a pain in the ass, and he's done a really good job of getting his kid's name out there. But here's the problem. How much is it out there? How much are teams going, I don't want this guy here? That's the problem that he's going to have with the NBA, with these kids, is do you want them around your program? And I think the answer is yes, because Lonzo is a tremendous talent. The answer is no, because you don't want the headache that is the father. You know, and you've seen stories come out. And here's the thing, in this world, in this day and age that we live in, people want to put you down. People want to take who's on top and knock them down. Well, here's the thing, Mr. Ball. The more you put yourself out there, the more you try to build a brand, selling $100 hats and $40, you know you're getting close to NCAA stuff. Because we all know that this is all based off Lonzo, who's at UCLA. There could be potential NCAA violations along with the father because of what he's doing, and people will not feel bad for you. When you look at this whole situation, you really feel bad for Steve Alford, whose kid's now graduating this year. There's an opening in Indiana. He's an Indiana guy. Is that not the perfect fit for him? Perfect fit. You go home, you save the program.
maybe you somehow convince Bobby Knight to come back if you're there. We all know that that's a pipe dream lately, especially after the stuff that Coach Knight had said about the school and about the administration there, that he feels wronged them. And that's his opinion. It's not absolute fact. Bobby Knight's one of the main reasons why Bobby Knight is not there and did not finish his tenure at Indiana the way he wanted to. But that's a show for another day. Start off, because, you know, God forbid this show goes 20 minutes without talking about the New England Patriots and Tom Brady. When you look at the situation around the jersey being stolen, I think you have to start to sit there and look at it and go, well, who's at fault here? And at fault, major leaguely, is the NFL. The NFL is on the hook big time here. And it's not just because it was Brady's jersey stolen post-game by this reporter from Mexico who had no cares in the world, had no want to cover the Super Bowl. Did not want to cover the Super Bowl. The NFL sees the biggest publication in Mexico. They want to grow the game there. So what did they do? They credentialed this guy going back to 2005. Here he is in post-game locker rooms taking selfies with guys. Snap, he's got selfies with Gronk. He's got selfies with Brady. He's got selfies with other guys. Now you're starting to find out. He's got Brady's jersey from this year. He's got Von Miller's helmet from last year. He's got possibly Von Miller's cleats, and Von Miller's looking for those. Nobody knows where those are. Brady's jersey from three Super Bowls ago. Now, and as more and more of this story comes out, you start to laugh. You really start to laugh and see how sad of a story this is becoming. Because as Brady said, he put the jersey in his personal bag. You know, you see guys, you watch NFL game day more, and you see guys coming into the stadium with briefcases or backpacks or, you know, attaché cases or whatever they want to call it, whatever you call it. But you see these guys walking, rolling in with this stuff. So you got Brady comes in, he's got his personal bag there. He puts the jersey in his personal bag. This guy goes into his personal stuff. That's not even the biggest problem of it. This guy was in the locker room when he didn't belong. And if you've seen through Fox Sports and Jay Glazer, who Fox had the Super Bowl, so they had the most cameras anywhere. They had cameras back by the locker rooms. They had cameras in the locker rooms. You see Mr. Ortega. At one point, even looked directly into the camera. He's just milling about. He's just chilling there. And nobody says, hey, you know, let me see your ID. And I get it. In the span of post-game Super Bowl in the winning team's locker room, there's a lot of excitement going on. People are coming and going. It's not like after a normal game where – generally speaking, most of the players come straight in. There's media stuff that's going on the field, you know, between the NFL Network and Fox. There's radio, there's local TV, there's local press, and they're all on the field trying to get a sound bite, pictures, interviews with players. And when you look at the situation, and this guy walks right in behind Belichick, wearing a suit, why would you think anything different? But I go to this question. I go to this question now. If Tom Brady, what if the guy stole money from him? What if he steals his wallet? What if he grabs his credit cards? It's a big thing. These guys carry cash. And as somebody who played sports, the locker room is your sanctuary. You never in a million years think anything is going to be stolen in the locker room. You don't. You never want to think that way. Because if you're thinking the locker room is not even safe, and you're bringing in whatever, cell phone, wallet, keys to your car. These guys aren't driving the same cars me and you drive. Driving nice, fancy cars. I think it'd be harder to steal a guy's car, but who knows? And if you're really not checking credentials, as people are walking up that tunnel and into that locker room, you got an even bigger problem on your hands. What if that guy wasn't there just to steal a jersey? What if he was there to do harm in that locker room? He's walking in there with the briefcase. Granted, that briefcase is checked before he walks in. But if this guy was able to get in there with nobody asking a question, what if he was there to do harm? And honestly, in this day and age, honestly think you need locker room access. You don't anymore. Do you ever get anything good out of a locker room? No. Both genders are in there. Got guys walking around buck stark naked. Do you need that headache if you're the National Football League? And they have a lot of questions. If you saw anybody from the Patriots going in there, it's a different color lanyard. As is pointed out by my wife. Different color lanyards. This guy walks in with a red lanyard. All these Patriots are walking in with gold. It's real easy for somebody to say, hey, what are you doing here? But here's what the NFL is going to do. They're going to pass the buck. They're going to blame Energy Stadium, their security, for this. They are. They're going to blame them. They're going to say, why weren't they stopping people? Not their job. In all honesty, there's no reason for any media to be in a locker room post-game, especially during a celebration. And you go back to Deion Sanders and Tim McIver. You're a real man, Deion. You don't belong in there. Put your cameras in. Why does it need to have these people in the locker room? It's a damn Super Bowl. And more media there than you can shake a stick at. Put them at a podium. Go back to some of the best sound bites you've heard from sports. Podiums. Yankees barely even let anybody in their locker room. Then again, they have more media than you can shake a stick at that covers that team. But you don't need it in there. Now, you go back, this guy's taken two of Brady's jerseys. He's got a Kurt Warner one that he has Kurt Warner to sign. And these guys don't want to be bothered by this. They don't want to go up and complain and cry. And, oh, you know, this media guy, this guy asked me for an autograph. Even though it clearly states on every media credential you ever see, you are not allowed to get autographs. Don't even ask for them. Now, here's the problem. This guy does all this. Now, if that paper ever wants to cover the Super Bowl, they may get denied. They're the biggest media, they're the biggest newspaper in Mexico. Now they're going to think twice about it. In a year where they were so the NFL was so concerned with having Barstool Sports there, one of the biggest media entities right now. You saw their presence. That's all you have to do. Look at their presence the Super Bowl week. They weren't allowed anywhere near the game. They didn't need that. The NFL didn't want them there. But this guy gets in there, doesn't even cover the game. He's getting autographs. He's taking selfies with people. He's a collector. He's the reason why when fans start to talk about when teams say bloggers aren't allowed in because they don't answer to anybody. There's a reason there. And trust me, here, we've tried. We've got some good access. We've got some great access. Places that we never thought we would. Man, you know, there's 10:30, and there is 10:30 on the dot. Coach, how the hell are you?
Hey,
it was like you were
been a
spin.
Long day.
It,
but if you need a big sit in return, I'm here.
You know, the funniest thing is it's like you looked at the clock, waited for it to hit 10:30, and then called in. Like, even on the switchboard.
I'm not home more than 6.5 minutes.
Wow.
I feel like one of those guys that was just traded. And he just made it in time to his new team, and they asked him to pinch hit in the ninth inning.
Oh,
as
Coach,
he raced to the ballpark with the taxi cab from the airport.
I remember Doug Mirabelli with that. That was one of my favorite things when he was traded from San Diego back to the Red Sox, and he had to catch Tim Wakefield that night. There I go. Play. He's getting a police escort in the whole nine yards. Here's what I wanted to talk to you about. We watched through each other the greatness that was the World Baseball Classic the last few nights. We've talked here on the show about it. But as a longtime baseball fan, and a guy who played. Is there a better way to do? Like, I know I've kicked it around. Me and you have kicked it around. But since we've done it, you know, not here, and so that people can listen. In your opinion, is there a better time to do it?
I most definitely believe there is when the players are already in shape, mid-season form, no pun intended, because that's literally when the All-Star break is, virtually smack in the middle, right? And everybody is not working hard to get into shape, even though many of them, if not all of them, show up in spring training from an off-season program. But you know what I'm talking about. They got to be in baseball shape. They got to see live major league pitching. They have to, you know, be out in the field. They got to be working. And to do it when the players and the pitchers are not at their 100% best of being ready. Some of them are still fine-tuning their mechanics to get themselves going for opening day. And it's like you're trying to accelerate that entire process in 2 weeks. You can only do so much in the off season.
Now, Tony Nardini, do I have a treat for you right now? A treat for you. Also joining us is a man who needs no introduction. but we have one for him anyway.
Checking in on the original Sinsider What's Brewing hotline, the man who has too many jobs to mention. But I will mention that he is a best-selling author in Italy, which is like having a girlfriend in Vancouver named Alberta, right, guys? The one, the only Jim Hague.
And I'll tell you what, to share billing with the immortal Tony Nardini is one of my highlights of my existence. Never mind having a robot that says my name as I call in, but to share billing with Tony Nardini is just, you know, it's a class.
I tell you, I never felt so honored in my life.
Yeah, I say the feeling is mutual. As somebody who
played
baseball at age 45 and kicking ass with the Otto Mac Anchors or whatever team that you were playing for back then, it's a pleasure for me to share billing.
Let me tell you,
hey, Jim.
Jim,
what he did. Ask this nut what he did last night. You think that's good?
God,
he was playing hockey last night. He was playing hockey. He was in
there
goal.
You go.
He was
and
in
I'm not gonna lie
70
to you,
and under league in Rockland County, New York, and at the Muncie Spinorama, whatever they call it. That's where he was.
That's all right.
And
I almost didn't make it here tonight because
to,
of a
took
collision.
17 pucks to the face and didn't bleed once.
Yep,
there was
Jimmy,
a major
were
collision last night too. I told George about it.
There was a collision. Were you there in front of the goal? Did you just whack him with your stick?
Let's put it this way. There was the skater, there was the puck, and there was me. The puck
yep.
was about halfway between us both. I made a decision to come flying out of my net. I knew I was going to get destroyed. I poked the puck away, but there it was. Ba-boom.
Your idol, Gump Worsley, would be very, very proud of you to be able to make that move.
Oh, man.
Tony,
it was a major collision, but we both
got
up.
Tony's the only person alive right now who knows who Gump Worsley is. So, but that's besides the point.
Gump Worsley.
I was going to ask Tony, how was it to play against Jacques Pond?
That's what I think. That was the other name I was going to think of. That's the other name. I thought of Jacques Pond and Gump Worsley came to my mind right away.
The Gump with no mask.
Really have that harvest.
No mask.
Tony, did Bobby Hull really have that hard of a slap shot? I mean.
Yes. Yes. It made Eddie Jockerman decide after one of the games at the Garden that
wear
he better go to the mask because there was a shot that literally went over his head, and it was the only time Jockerman felt some fear because goalies don't fear anything. We don't fear anything. But
notice
without wearing
we
the mask and the way he saw the shot go over him, just past his – he I think a week later or something like that, he decided he better go to the mask.
That's like,
no,
that's like
Corey
me saying, you know, we power forwards, me, Chris Webber, and Maurice Lucas, you know, we wonder about whether or not we can get the double double. You know, as long as we stay close to the rim, we can get a double double. all of us, me, Chris Webber, Maurice Lippert.
All right.
Jimmy, by the way, speaking of Chris Webber, he is seriously the worst announcer in the history of NCAA basketball. It's by far. It's not even close. And he capped his career off tonight by in the Gonzaga game when the kid hit the Gonzaga head, he was clapping.
Oh yeah,
he applauded. Seriously, I kid you not. Go if you want to after you're done, go back to the replay and play it over and listen closely as the kid hits the shot. You can hear applause, and that's Chris Webber. While he's announcing the game, applauding.
That's
said it to me right then and there. Just and that you know, like, okay, could you picture like Marv Albert applauding? You know, could you Marty Glickman? Marty Glickman. Who's a running get it through?
Hey, Jimmy, let me ask
you. It's called being a homer.
Yeah, I don't know what that was. I don't know what it was. Anyway,
that's not – no.
Go ahead.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
Susan Waldman's a homer.
Oh,
yeah.
Please.
But she's really
yeah.
not, though, because
her...
she's a Red Sox fan, but that's besides the point.
Has she ever played a baseball game in her life?
Oh, that has nothing to do with it, Tony. That's unfair.
All right. I thought maybe she might have played some girls' softball.
That's unfair.
She just sucks. It's just fear.
John, I don't think
you know when
you're
Sterling
ever played a game in his life. Do you
well,
want to
do you know her very well?
Yes, very well. Good friend.
I didn't know that. I wouldn't have.
You know, John Sterling never played a game in his life. We're going to criticize him. He didn't even play.
He, should,
you know, he never played in the Yeshiva League in the Bronx. Never played. Howard Cosell admitted that he never played a game in his life. And, you know, do we criticize what Howard Cosell was? You know, he created a word. He created a word for those who played the game. It was called jockocracy. And he hated those who played the game. As a matter of fact, he wrote a book entitled I Never Played the Game. That was Howard Cosell, the name of a book he wrote. I have an autographed copy of it, by the way.
Nice.
All right, Jimmy.
Nice.
Let me ask you this.
Because you know what? You can't get that anymore.
No. Jimmy, let me ask you this. Tony, I'll throw this to you. I'll throw this to you, Tony, as a different way. Jimmy, the guy who went into the locker room and stole Brady's jersey, Von Miller's cleats.
Oh, my God.
As a working member of the media, how on the pantheon of sin that you could commit as a working member of the media, where is that?
It's way up there, and let me tell you a secret, okay? And I'm not going to mention the man's name because I don't want to get him in trouble. But it was a guy who I worked with way back when who went into the Chicago Bulls locker room on a shoot-around day. And he went into the Bulls locker room, and he took Jordan's jersey. And we sat there, and we looked at him as he did it, and they said, "It's okay. They have lots of them." He put it in his bag and walked out of the locker room. Now, this was
Guy still working?
I don't know. This is a major sports writer in the metropolitan area. Went into the Chicago Bulls locker room and stole Michael Jordan's jersey. How about that?
All right.
So, did I shock
Jordan wear number 12?
What's that?
Was that what led to Jordan wearing number 12 for a game?
Hey, where did he wear number 12?
Oh, now you're going to ask me. I saw Mitchell and Ness release the throwback of Jordan wearing number 12.
I don't remember him ever wearing 12. I know he wore 23 for the most of his career, obviously, but for a while there, 45. When he first came back to the NBA, he wore 45, and that was his baseball number. Okay, so he did wear, like, the night he lit up the Knicks for 55, as they called it, double nickels, at the Garden, and I was there for that, and I couldn't believe what I was watching. He scored 55 points that night, and it was like the third game back from his retirement.
Yeah, that was with his number 45, right? Yeah.
He wore number 45 that night, yes. So those are the only two numbers I ever remember him wearing. So, incredibly, this jersey that was stolen was a 23.
Let's see. Jordan wore number – I found it. It's an SI article. He wore number 12 – here, Jordan's number 3 is believed to have been stolen on the day of the game. The Bulls did not bring a backup number 23 jersey with them, but at the time, the team did have a just-in-case number 12 kit bearing no name on the back.
Oh, my God. Is that against the Knicks?
Against the Magic.
But this jersey was stolen during the playoffs.
Yeah.
Knicks Bulls 1996.
Oh, man. This gets better. Okay.
Go ahead.
So, are we going to solve the problem of the WBC?
Okay, that's
next.
Jimmy,
is there a problem, Tony? Did you think there was a problem? I don't think there was a problem. Other than the fact that the major superstars weren't there,
But other than that, I mean, there were enough stars there on the Team USA that appeased me. You know the thing that I knew that Team USA was going to win last night was that after they got past Seth Lugo and this Puerto Rican manager was going to the mound and he was bringing in one reliever after another that I never heard of. And mind you, for me not to know who a baseball player is very rare. And then when it was 8-0 or 7-0, he brings in the immortal J.C. Romero to pitch. And J.C. Romero's last place of employment was? Yes, the Somerset Patriots.
So here's a guy now going in and pitching in a basically what's an all-star game, and he brings in a guy who pitches for, yes, the Somerset Patriots. Did they have a chance to win that game last night? I don't think so.
Wow.
And the Puerto Ricans are all upset that Marcus Stroman, who pitched for Puerto Rico in the last World Baseball Classic of 2013, pitched for the United States this time, because after all, he is, quote, American. But that's why they were all taunting him last night, and that's why he was really upset. And as a matter of fact, I don't know if you saw when he got taken out of the game, and I thought he should have, like, given a stand, because they gave him a standing ovation, I thought he should have tipped his cap. No, he went into the locker room, turned around, and looked at the Puerto Rican dugout and let out a good old F-U. Okay.
I saw him do that.
On international television. There you go, Marcus. We all got to know that you're a gutter mouth. F-U. Here's Angel Pagan with his blonde hair and no job. He has no job. Nobody's hired him, okay? He gets his double to break up the no-hitter. They're losing 8-0. He gets up on second base and starts pumping his chest and pounding his chest and pointing his finger like going, dude, look at the scoreboard. You're losing 8-0.
Right.
In the eighth inning.
Exactly.
Cut it out.
You know, did you guys have a problem with what Ian Kinsler said?
What? I didn't hear what you said.
Did you have a problem with what Ian Kinsler had said?
What did
about
he
how
did
they
say? Like, I have no idea.
How the Americans play the game the right way, the Latin Americans play it the wrong way, basically, because they celebrate
really
and showboats.
Yeah. Did he really say that? He really said that?
Jim, we were talking about...
If I was Ian Kinsler, and the first time I face a Dominican pitcher in the season this year, I'm not digging into the box. I'm not standing up in the front of the box, if you know what I mean. I'm not. You know, like, Jose Quintana, here it comes, Ian, here it comes.
Here's what he said, and then he, of course, clarified it after somebody told him. I think you should clarify that. I hope kids watching the WBC can watch the way we play the game and appreciate the way we play the game, as opposed to the way the Puerto Rico players and Dominican players. That's not taking anything away from. That just wasn't the way we were raised. They were raised differently to show emotion and passion when you play.
We do show emotion, we do show passion,
but we just do it in a different way.
A lot of chest pounded in that,
in that tournament, man,
I'll tell you that.
You know what? He's got a shovel, and he's digging a ditch. He's got a moat around second base. There's a moat. It's right around where he goes out to play. He's dug himself a huge ditch. So he's now, not only did he piss off the Puerto Ricans, but he pissed off the Dominicans too. That's real, real smart. Why not stop there and say, you know what? Those pitchers from the Netherlands, I can't stand the way they play the game, because you know why? They eat cheese in between innings. Jesus. You know what? The Italians, they can't play the game because Tony Nardini's Italian. I mean, that's basically what they, you know, why did he stop there? Just keep going. He was on a roll. He has dug himself such a huge hole. I don't want to, you know, he better face nothing but American pitchers for the first month of the season. The minute he faces a Dominican or a Puerto Rican, he's going down.
There's no other words to describe it. But following Wednesday's title game, he clarified his statements, and he said he never intended to disparage Latin American players.
He never intended to disparage them. He just did.
Yeah.
He never intended to do it. He did. Big difference. Big difference.
So we were discussing, is it better to play in the mid-season during the All-Star break?
No. If you're going to have this thing, you're doing it the right way right now. You cannot interrupt a Major League Baseball season, which is already too long to begin with, and then interrupt it for 3 weeks for this. For this. No.
But what, Jimmy, what if you didn't
end? Mind you, do you really think, say the Mets and the Cardinals are in the middle of a pennant race, okay? And all of a sudden now Team USA says, you know what, we'd like to have DeGrom and Syndergaard, and the Cardinals, oh, yeah, we'd like to have Jamie Martinez and Garcia's now with the Braves. Okay, so just say, you know, hypothetically, Jamie Martinez and Jamie Garcia, we'd like to have them pitch for Dominican Republic in the World Baseball Classic that's going to stop baseball for 3 weeks
well,
in the middle of the
summer. We were looking at it from a different angle, that these guys are not in shape this quickly to compete at a real high level this quickly because there's more risk for injury. And lo and behold, the Yankees just lost their shortstop for an entire month. And
he fell.
The pitchers aren't 100% ready to throw. And
it's
here they are, Darren down.
Other than Stroman last night, no pitcher threw more than 50 pitches. Than Stroman last night, and he had a no-no. That's the reason why he went. No pitcher threw more than 50 pitches. So it was basically a lot like a spring training games for these pitchers, but yet there was competition involved.
But Jimmy, what if you did it this way?
I think it's really good for baseball. I certainly think it's really good for the other countries that are involved. Although I got a real big kick out of listening to listening to Francesa this afternoon when the first caller says, you know what, I got to disagree with you, Mike, about the WBC because you know what. These guys last night were representing their countries. The Team USA was representing the United States, and the other team was representing Puerto Rico. Excuse me? They're representing their country? What country is Puerto Rico in? What the hell?
You know, but
you
know what I'm talking about, Mike. They're representing their heritage. Their heritage? They're American. You know, they're American. They can vote for the United. They can vote. I would imagine a lot of them voted for Donald Trump. They could be there. You know.
Francesa was downplaying the entire WBC the whole afternoon. He was almost bragging how he wasn't watching an inning of it.
Because you know why? Because the world evolves around him. So you know, like,
well, it does.
If he doesn't watch it, then neither should you. You know, like, I don't watch hockey, so, you know, I don't know anything about hockey. So, you know what, listeners, don't call here about it. Ask me about hockey because I don't know anything about it. And don't call me about tennis, and, you know, but I play golf, so I'll answer questions about 187th ranked football player in the world right now is Shlomo Blumstein out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, who's got a 6-under-par handicap. But I'll talk about him, but don't ask me at all about, you know, who the rookie of the year is going to be in the NHL because I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, Jimmy,
what if they did this
for this? Have the first two rounds now. Extend the All-Star break to the end of the week and play the finals then.
You're nuts.
So that you're not just playing this in L.A. Like, could you imagine this having the finals at Yankee Stadium or Fenway or Wrigley where you're going to have the entire place jam-packed with people?
Excuse me. Did you watch the game last night? They had 57,000 people in Dodger Stadium. 57,000.
No,
for an exhibition game.
I understand
game. 57,000. 57,000.
Yeah, but some of those games had 12 people. Yeah, but there were some games that, like, some of the American-Canadian game in Miami had, you know, friends and family.
Well, they had 12,000 people. That's because people in Miami don't care about the United States or Canada. They care about, you know, Dominican Republic, and Cuba, and Puerto Rico.
Francesa was also downplaying the fact that, you know, everybody was treating it as if it was like the Olympics, and it really isn't. You had a lot of Americans representing the different countries because I guess they were short of ball players. You had a lot of Americans on, mm-hmm. on the different teams, you know. So, I don't know. I have mixed emotions over it. I didn't get into it personally, like as deep as I probably feel I should have, because I love baseball. I mean, anything.
Right.
I watch 18 Ants play, you know. But
so then, why didn't you watch the game last night?
I did watch.
Okay.
My point is, I didn't watch with the same intensity that I might watch the World Series. Okay.
Because it's not the same.
Yeah. I mean, and also, you, like he said, I mean, the only thing I was going to agree with Francesa, because I don't really like that guy too much. I think he's very, very arrogant, and especially with a lot of the callers. But
agreed.
That being
agreed.
Said, I don't. The one good point was there were a lot of Americans playing on the different countries. So
well,
I think it's
true.
You know.
You know.
I don't know. I had mixed emotions. I have mixed emotions on the WBC.
All right. Well, Seth Lugo was the starting pitcher last night for Puerto Rico. Seth Lugo, who admittedly told somebody the other day that he, quote, never stepped foot in Puerto Rico until he got picked for this team. And it's the only reason why is because his mother is Puerto Rican. He never stepped foot in Puerto Rico until he got picked for the team.
You know, it's the same thing that you look at, like a Giancarlo Stanton. He caught a lot of crap for not playing for Puerto Rico, too. It's like, be damned your nationalism, but you better play for us because, you know, your grandmother was born there. You know,
yeah, no.
But that's what, like, that's the difference, though. Like, when you look at, you know, like, Team Israel, who, by the way, I think they're what got me into watching it because I almost forgot this thing had started.
Yeah.
Because they had really cool hats and the fact that they won a couple games. But, you know, you look at the fact that, like, Cuba was as bad as they were in this tournament, and that just, like, blew my mind that Cuba wasn't any good.
Yep.
Yep.
You know, because
I
think,
agree, yeah.
Because we're, you know,
and the Dominican Republic wasn't. Dominican Republic was a very flawed team too, as well. Flawed.
Yeah.
But
and,
you know, like you look at
Puerto,
like, Puerto Rico's pitching staff had JC Romero on it.
Hey Jim, let me ask you a question.
Sure,
do you think the Yankees are going to win 83 games this year?
No.
No. Do you have a bet on them, Tony? Because I don't.
I don't think they're going to win 82. Well, that's the under and over. That's the under and over in
82 and a half.
82 and a half is the under and over. Okay, yeah. I think that if there is one thing about the Yankees this year that I would be very, very happy about if I'm a Yankee fan, is that you're going to get to see some of the new future stars of the game playing on a regular basis. So you're going to get to see Gary Sanchez. You're going to get to see Bird. You're going to get to see Judge. You're going to get to see eventually, you know, Gleyber
Torres.
Probably Tyler Austin. I don't know if he's a player, but he's not bad. You're going to get to see the kid that they got for Andrew Miller, the kid from
Clint Frazier?
Clint Frazier, that's the kid's name. All right. Those are the stars of tomorrow. As we all know that fully well, that name. And truly,
I was
gonna
say, I played
stars of the, yeah, I know you did. That's why I said it. That's what you call it. That, I think that's the one thing that's going to be the redeeming grace to the Yankees, is that they're going to finally, for the first time since, I don't know, 1992, 93, integrate homegrown players, minor league players into their system that play on a regular basis. And that I would say would excite me more than anything else, because I want to see a Gary Sanchez blossom.
I'd want to see Bird, who I think is going to be a superstar. Never mind. I think Bird's going to be a better player than Sanchez. I think right now, if you put right now, put it down in your book right now, okay? Bird hits 25 homers and drives 100 runs this year. As a matter of fact, I'd go as far as to say, how about this? That Bird has more RBIs than Sanchez this year. How about that?
That's a bold one, but the way Sanchez played last year, that would be a stretch. But if Bird is healthy,
Sanchez could be Kevin Moss, I think he
can definitely do it. Yes.
Right. Well, he showed enough
before he got hurt. He showed enough.
I don't know if you watched the game the other day, but he hit two absolute bombs. I mean, just the first one he hit, you know, he for all intents and purposes, he stood there and watched it, and deservedly so, because he sat there and it was like, you know, like it was like in the movie Major League. Because it's something that travels that far, that fast, should have a pilot and stewardesses on it. That's that, you know, because he hit it a ton, and then he hit a second one to left center field later on in the game. But he hit two homers, and I think said six RBIs, and I think he's got six homers now for the spring. He's going to have a monstrous season. He's a player and a player and a half.
The only thing that worries me with the Yankees going forward is,
they don't have a third, fourth, or fifth starter. Is that the thing that worries them?
You got to be talking about their pitching. I mean, always their question mark.
What pitching do they have? Who's their pitching?
Well,
Tanaka and who
after
else?
Tanaka, you don't know what you're going to get with
thing.
Pineda.
Right. You have no
then
idea.
You got Sabathia.
Who's definitely on the downside. Okay, and who else? Who's the 4 and 5?
I think Warren, Mitchell and Severino are battling it out.
Severino's got to be there. Okay, to be honest with you, I like Severino. I like Severino a lot. I think he's going to be very good. Okay.
You know,
I guess Warren's got to be the fifth starter then, right?
I would think so.
Unless they decide to have him be the
long
fifth
man
and sixth
of the
inning pitcher. Yeah. Unless they decide to do that. But you've got Mitchell, Severino, Sabathia, Tanaka, and Pineda. I think those may be your five starters.
And then Nardini coming out of the bullpen?
If you need it, baby.
Yeah, and
then
can Nardini give you a couple innings? You know. Like if
Girardi
goes
there
and
says,
Goomba here, you know, can you get me through the sixth?
I'll give you the setup to Betances, and then
can you give me the sixth?
I tell you what, I can't give it to you. I will guarantee it to you.
There you go.
Yeah. But you know what, Jimmy? You know what scares me the most about them is who's running things.
I think Cashman is. Cashman is running things. It's not Hal. It's Cashman.
Is it Levine and Trost who are going to start
Levine and Trost only do the business side. They're not doing the baseball side. They may do the marketing side. They may do the TV contract side, but they have nothing to do with the baseball side. Nothing.
Yeah, I don't think Levine has
Trost would agree to it. Levine in my mind is like what Alexander Haig was when Reagan got shot. You know, when Reagan got shot, Alexander Haig stood up and said, "That's it. I'm in control here. I got everything under control." You know. Well, that's what Randy Levine does. Randy Levine says, "Don't worry about it. I don't know where Hal is right now. He's probably hunting somewhere in Sri Lanka, but I'm in control. I can handle this right now." And meanwhile, Hal is like pushing the curtain aside, saying, "Randy, I'm right here. All right, Randy, I'm right here.
How he survived as long with the Yankees as he has is unbelievable to me.
Who, Randy Levine?
Like, who does he have naked pictures of?
He's done a pretty damn good job in terms of marketing that franchise. You don't think? You don't think?
Do the Yankees really need marketing now?
George, what do you think? The Yankees market themselves? You can't go to a city in this country and walk five blocks without seeing somebody wearing a Yankee hat. You can't. The bad thing is, too, is that especially in New York City, a lot of these gangs wear different color Yankee hats. That's how you're identified with what gang you're involved in. You know, yellow and red and black and what have you. That's horrible. But in terms of all over the country, oh my God, Yankee hats are all over. All over.
You see it worldwide too with the Yankees. But you think Randy Levine is the one behind the scenes of that marketing?
Who's that?
You believe it's Randy Levine behind those scenes doing a lot of that marketing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I think Trost is the one that is involved with the day-to-day operations, ticket sales, and what have you. But Randy Levine is the one that handles TV contracts. And
Trost also made the greatest misspeak ever when he said, "Well, we don't want people who aren't used to sitting in the $5,000 game seat."
Bad move. Because he alienated himself with the diehard Yankee fan that doesn't have a pot to piss in and can't afford to spend $195 a ticket a game and watches them religiously and knows everybody's number and statistics going back to 1966. He could not have said a worse thing because he alienated himself from the common fan and just said, you know, the true Yankee fans are the corporate boxes. And that's an absolute crock of shit.
Oh, please.
Because if you could tell that the elite seats that are at Yankee Stadium, the ones that they try to sell for $3,500 a pop.
Oh, please! It was all empty.
Empty, and then you can look behind it, and those are they're the real behind it. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely retarded is the best way to describe that. Retarded.
You know, but like I look at that whole thing, you know, and that really, as much as I like the Yankees and I love the Yankees, I would go to games. You said it best. That alienated me. I don't have any want to go to that place.
Correct. Well, you're not alone.
Well,
like I went
there
to see Garth Brooks last year, and I wasn't paying $15 a fucking beer. I'm telling you, it's horrible.
$15 a beer, $45 a bar, $195 for a ticket. Wow.
Criticism.
My team's getting just as worse because you know what? I've never heard it before on any other team and any other franchise in history of professional sports. Okay? But they now have introduced different ticket prices depending upon what game it is, who the opponent is, the day of the week it is. If you wanted to buy opening day tickets for the Mets this year, you know how much it was, the average ticket pre-sale, before it went to, like, the secondary market? Do you know if you wanted to buy opening day tickets from the Mets organization, do you know how much the average ticket of an opening day ticket was this year? You want to guess?
$65.70.
No, the average ticket was $235.
$235
a piece. To buy opening day tickets to go see the Mets. Are you kidding me? I'm going to spend $500 before I even get in a ballpark to freeze my bejesus off and sit there? Are you kidding me? Now, mind you, the same seats that were $235 for opening day were going for $50 for the second game of the season. Oh, isn't that nice? You can't have two different ticket prices. You can't. And they've done it this year.
You know what started
the Nationals,
that, I think?
The Dodgers. Go ahead.
I believe the Devils and the Rangers, I don't know if they were the first ones to start it, but they were doing it religiously for the last, oh, God, I guess it's about 4 years now, 5 years. They incorporated that philosophy, depending exactly what you said. If the Devils were playing the Rangers at home, that was a certain price, or their elite plan, okay? If they were playing the Montreal Canadiens, Islanders, Rangers, Flyers, it was one price. If Ottawa was coming in, or the Colorado Avalanche, or the Winnipeg Jets, it was a much lower price. And they had all this tier pricing. And on top of that, exactly what you said too, depending on the time of the season, holiday time, Christmas time, Thanksgiving, jacked up. And depending on who they were playing. So you see it in baseball now. They're pulling the same shit. You're going to price
now,
people right out.
The Mets started this years ago.
Oh, they're all pricing people
the Mets?
Right out.
The Mets
I don't
have
know
been
much
doing
about
that for
what
years.
They did. I honestly don't remember the tier pricing with the Mets. Well, I just remember the hockey guys doing it, and this is the first I've heard of the Yankees actually starting to do it. And it seems to be a trend now around all of sports.
Well, the Mets have done it this year. They got different prices for the Dodgers, the Nationals, the Yankees opening day, and there's one. Oh, and the Cubs. So the Cubs. Nationals, Yankees, Dodgers opening day. Different price tickets for those games. Are you kidding me? You got to be out of your mind to be doing such a thing.
All right, I know.
And I'll tell you right now.
I know the Mets have done that for years. It just wasn't as big a disparity. Yeah, because I remember back in like 2002, they had it. Because I remember,
I was a season ticket holder then. No, I don't.
Season ticket holders don't see that
from 89 through 2006. So I don't think so. I mean, I seriously don't.
Jimmy, on the normal market, it's one thing. It's when you're season ticket holders, you don't see it because when you have like the full, like what Tony was saying with the Devils, sell me on the fact that my tickets are $40 a game. Now, when you actually see the ticket prices per game, like when they play the Rangers, my tickets that are normally $40 a game are, I think they're jacked up to like 97, let's say.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's right. That's right.
Wow.
The face value of those tickets jack skyward. Now, if you're a season ticket holder, they'll give that game to you at a reduced cost, quote unquote, and you won't get billed the face value that they want to sell to the general public. If someone walking into the damn box office, hey, do you have any tickets available? Oh yeah, we have the upper corner upstairs for $95. Okay, season ticket holder probably got that particular game. In his plan, probably for 59, 50,
Wow, okay.
It'll be
a much
lower price. You know,
like if
you have
looked at all my, you know, I used to get to my tickets. They all said the same, you know, same face value price for all 20 tickets I had. Or
but I remember one year they had played St. Louis. It was the year, I guess, Tino had gone to St. Louis, and it was calendar night or something. And I had gone
to
see the
game. You had to be there because you had to get Tino's calendar.
No, I had to see Tino.
You had to. Yeah, of course. How could I not? Constantino Martinez is the greatest. He's the greatest Yankee that ever lived.
To me, yeah.
Constantino, the greatest Yankee that ever lived.
You know, leave Tino alone. He won four World Series with them.
Hey, Jim, I got to ask you this.
He won four?
Yeah.
When did,
96
he won
and...
three.
No,
he
was
those
there
in
96, 90. In 96, he was there.
Oh, and he was there in 2002. Okay, you're right. He won four.
Yeah.
96, 97, 98, and 2000. You're right.
Yep. Now, a lot of criticism when they decided to build the new Yankee Stadium across the street, and they took it off the hallowed grounds of the greats of the past.
They had to move first base from the old building to the new one because of Constantino Martinez.
Yes, they should have.
Yeah.
They had to bring
but
over.
But there was
box.
A lot of criticism because it's not the same. They're not playing on the same dirt, the same grounds as DiMaggio and Berra and Mantle and all of them, Rizzuto.
Okay.
Let's not forget Lou Gehrig.
and of course the house that Ruth built. You know, I guess this one was. That's why this one is the house that George built.
Yeah.
As much as Yankee fans want to say it's the house that Jeter built, I always used to laugh when Yankee fans would say it's the house that Jeter built. Then why didn't you come see him play?
Yeah.
Because if you look at their by year attendance figures, they didn't start selling out every night until they got A-Rod. It had nothing to do with the Golden Boy.
No, they started to sell out when they started to win World Series.
True, but they also didn't hit $4 million until they had A-Rod.
Okay.
You can make that.
Let's give A-Rod the credit for hitting 4 million fans. What was the reason when the Mets hit 4 million fans? What was the reason for that? A-Rod?
No, when the Mets hit 4 million fans, because they were the best team in the city.
Well, then when the Yankees
when
the Yankees got 4 million fans, they were the best team in the city.
Yeah,
and they were the best team in the city until 3 years ago. Until 3 years ago, then they had to relinquish that title.
When
the New York teams start to win, that's when everything goes up. I mean, let's face it.
I agree. There's nothing better when they're both good. There's nothing better. Nothing better. I'm a Mets fan, and I lost the 2000 World Series, and it's something I'll never forget. But you know what? That electricity that went on that week was marvelous. Was marvelous.
Yeah.
It really was.
You couldn't.
I made a bet, Tony. I don't know if you were aware about this, but I made a bet with the FA, and I said to the FA, the FA said, "Okay, if the Mets win the World Series, I'll wear a Met hat in my column head in the paper. But if the Yankees win a World Series, you got to wear a Yankee hat in your paper." And I went, "Oh God, do I want to make that bet? I'll make that bet because I think the Mets are going to win a World Series." So I said, okay, I'll make the bet. And sure enough, lo and behold, in the Hudson Reporter, somewhere, I still have the picture of it. But I not only did I wear a Yankee hat, but I wore Yankee stickers underneath my cheeks.
I have to see a picture of that.
Yeah.
Because you have to have been dying taking that picture.
My wife took the picture, and my wife loved every minute of it because she's Yankee. So she's the one that took the picture, and she loved every minute of it. I tell you what, everybody says, what was the toughest moment of your lives as being married? And it wasn't about an hour ago when I fell and was laying around, flopping around like a fish on my bedroom floor trying to get up again. It took me about a half an hour to get up. So it wasn't that. But the toughest moment of my marriage was the 2001 series. And I'll tell you a real funny story is that at that time we had cable in the bedroom and I had the satellite dish in the living room. And we decided that we could not watch the World Series together. Could not.
Yeah, you told me this story. I remember you were talking about this when we were at right.
All right. So she's in the bedroom and I'm in the living room and she's getting the feed about 10 seconds more earlier than I'm getting. About 10 seconds earlier. And when things are going good, I start hearing, yeah,
yeah, and I don't even know what's happening yet. And I'm hearing, yeah. So she did yeah about five times, which that I then, you know, the Irish Pollock in me just came flying out. And I screamed at the top of my lungs, shut the bar up! To which that...
So you're saying that's what...
No, it gets funnier, right? To which I mean, because the windows were open. It was a nice October night. The windows were open. And the shut the fuck up scream, bellow, went out the door of the house. So much so that the next door neighbor, Dr. Murphy, comes knocking on the, ringing the doorbell and says, Jim? Yes, Dr. Murphy? Is everything all right in here? I said, yeah, it's called the World Series.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything's okay in here. It's called the World Series.
It's called the World Series.
It's called the World Series. Like, he thought that I was in here in the house beating up Mary.
Yep.
And I was like pounding the shit out of her. And I was basically just telling her to shut
up. Oh, my God.
Watching baseball. That's all it was. Like, shut up!
When
Piazza hit the ball, when runners on second and third and two out, in the fifth game of that World Series, I swear to God, off the bat, I thought it was gone.
Oh.
And I went, yeah! And then all of a sudden, I saw Bernie camping under it, and I was like, oh, no.
I think everybody in baseball world thought that ball was out.
Was that the one off of Cohen? No. That was off of Mariano in the bottom of the ninth. Luis Soho just got the 2-run single off outlighter to make the score 3-1, and now it goes to the bottom of the ninth, and we
Piazza
got
gets a hold of one.
Second and third, two out. And Piazza hit one that I thought off the bat was a 3-run homer.
I thought it was gone too.
And I went nuts, and I was like, yeah! And then the next thing I see, Bernie camping under it. Going, oh.
Bernie settled under it, and that was it.
And until 2 years ago, that was about as close as we got. And 2 years ago, we got close again, and we lost again in 5 games. But, you know, I cannot, for the wildest, take anything away from what happened 2 years ago, nor anything that happened last year. Gravy is what the best way I could describe it. 2015 is still in my mind the most miraculous season in the history of the Met franchise, and that includes 69. I think the 2015, because no one thought that they had a prayer of doing anything that season, and they won the NL pennant. No one.
You know, but Tony, you know what my favorite Jim Hague articles are? Is on his blog.
Oh, okay.
When Jimmy sits there and decides that the Mets season's over, there is nothing better.
Yep.
When he starts to eulogize them in August, go to the OTB, go to your favorite betting website, and put the Mets in the playoffs. Because when Jimmy sits there and tells you it's over, the Mets are going to the World Series, or they're at least making the playoffs.
Yeah. August, if you can, August 23rd, 2015 blog. Go ahead and read that. It's like, blow taps.
I still
over.
Do.
It's over. I know it's over. I'm now done. I can't watch this team anymore. They make me sick. Blah, 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 blah. Sure enough, they went to the World Series.
And then last year,
when they lost the game last year, after they hit the Grand Slam home run, the immortal, what the hell was the guy's name who hit the Grand Slam home run off of oh, God, I can't even think of his name now.
Was that the walk-off?
Italian name. Was that?
Was that the walk-off Grand Slam?
No, they had a Grand Slam home run in the first inning off of Baumgartner. And they now are winning 4-0 off of Baumgartner with DeGrom on the mound. And they're winning 4-0 with I can't think of the guy's name, Justin Ruggiano.
just hit me. Justin Ruggiano hits a grand slam home run off of Madison Bumgarner, who had not given up an earned run against the Mets in 4 years. And he gives up four in the first inning in this game. And I'm sitting there going, okay, we've got this one in the bag. All right. So I'm going to just, like, relax. DeGrom's got a four-run lead. They never score four runs for DeGrom in the entire game. They gave him four runs in the first inning. Well, DeGrom goes out there in the bottom of the first and coughs it right back up. The point where the Giants got the spot. Mets come back, and in the sixth inning or whatever it is, they get, I don't know, and again, just a parade of shit players, one after another, start get hit after hit. Like Ty Kelly got a two-run single, and my mother got a two-run single, and all these people are coming up and getting hits for the Mets, and they're now winning 8-4. And I said, okay, we now can't lose this game, can we? Can we lose this game? And sure enough, we lose 9-8. And that's when I said, this is over.
In case you want to know the date of that, it was August 4th, 2016, because I just looked up the block.
You did?
Yeah.
And what is it? Well, go ahead. Read the blog for a second real quick.
All right. Ready? Here you go, Coach. You'll love this. So I'll give you the first three paragraphs of this. You know that old adage that you have to go for everything when you have the chance because you never know when you might get the opportunity again? Well, it's so true for the 2016 Mets, who appear dead in the water these days. Sure, the second wild card remains within reach as the Mets trail the St. Louis Cardinals by like 2.5 games for that berth. And this eternal optimist will say the Mets will get it since the Mets say that once the Mets get into the playoffs, they have enough pitching to make some noise there. But here's a sharp dose of the reality here. The Mets just don't have enough horses to keep up with the Dodgers, Marlins, and Cards. Oh, my. Last night's horrible and inexcusable loss to the dreaded Yankees is proof that they just can't keep up the pace. Despite the Mets' cracked medical staff and administration tell us, ace lefty Steven Matz is hurting badly from that bone spur in his elbow and shouldn't be pitching with it. They should shut Matz down, let his barking elbow rest for a bit, then have surgery to take care of it. So that was
last
year.
I was right there about Matz. The game I was talking about was the game against the Giants. I don't know. It was in August.
That was in 2015.
No, 2016.
That was your
2016.
Was it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Justin Ruggiano in a grand slam off of Madison Bumgarner, and they were winning 4-0 in the top of the first inning. And I was like, oh, my God, this is really happening. And they lost. And they lost that game. They lost like 9-8, 12-8, something like that.
Well, that's like in 78 when
they lost 78.
They fell so far behind, and it was already late August. From the behind the Red Sox, the famous championship game, the 163rd game in 1978.
Yep. Guidry's
big year, 25-3. And next thing you know,
14.5 out the Yankees.
The Yankees start winning, Boston starts losing, and the city was thumping again. Holy!
Yep.
Everybody was counting them out. That Martin, that's when Martin was let go. Bob Lemon came in. Next thing you know, ba-boom, here we go.
That was also
amazing.
The summer.
Do you remember that year? Boston won, I think, their last, I don't know if it was their last 10 games or 9 games. The Yankees were winning every day with them. One game lead.
Yep.
Last game of the season at Yankee Stadium, Rick Waits.
Rick Waits threw a shutout against the Yankees.
Rick Waits beats the Yankees because me and two of my high school buddies, we went to that game. We wanted to see the Yankees clinch, and they didn't. They lost. Boston wins again.
Yep.
Up to Boston for game 163.
Did you go to that?
Bucky fucking did.
Rick Waits.
Rick Waits threw a shutout for the Indians against the Yankees. On that Sunday, without question, 6-0.
Actually,
I think
he beat the Yankees that day. If I'm not mistaken, it was 6-2.
6-0.
He threw a shutout.
Did he? I don't think it was a shutout.
Yeah.
I'm going to check
six
it out. I don't think it was just shutouts, but the Yankees got beat soundly.
Yep, 6-0. I'm pretty sure it was 6-0. I remember watching it. You know, I watched.
Right.
I followed
right.
the season.
You could
know,
be right. I don't remember.
I remember it very well. And then I didn't think they had a chance at all. Yeah. but I knew that the Yankees had a shot the next day because it was Guidry going against the Red Sox. And I said, well, it's all set up for the Yankees. One game, they got Guidry on the mound. Little did I know that they were going to have Bucky fucking Dent hit the home run. Bucky Dent.
You know what the famous quote after that game was? You know what the famous quote in the Boston locker room? Mike Torres.
Bucky fucking Dent. Oh.
Well, that was part of it. That was part of it, what is some of his answers. But he was questioned on, I don't know, the pitch. What, blah, blah, blah. I think he got so disgusted from the questions after a while, he says, fuck it. 50 million Chinese don't give a shit. And he walked away. I swear to God.
Do you know, Tony, Mike Torres and I became very, very close when I worked at the Newark Bears. And he was first the pitching coach, and then he was the general manager. We became very close. Like, we hang out together,
nice.
and he'd come and sit in the press box with me during games.
I didn't know you got to know him so well. That's cool.
Oh, we got along. Oh, God. I tell you what, when we had the Bears had that coaching staff with Tim Raines was the manager, Ron Karkovice was the hitting coach, and Mike Torres was the pitching coach. And then the next year, Leibritz was the bench coach. Those are great guys. I mean, I got a good chance to hang out with them all the time, and they were phenomenal. They were absolutely phenomenal.
I can imagine.
And Torres and I became inseparable. I mean, we would, you know, go hang out together and go have dinner and drinks, and, you know, it was great.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good memory. That's a real good memory.
Because I made fun of Torres.
He won with the Yankees in 77. I don't know what happened. He ended up going to Boston. So you know what? He had a good run. He had a really good run.
Yeah, and he gave up the most runs in an inning in the history of the Mets. He gave up the game that Von Hayes hit two homers in the first inning off the Mets when Mike Torres was touched up for 10 earned runs in a third of an inning in Philadelphia.
Oh, my God. I don't remember that. Holy shit.
Yeah, yeah. 1983. Give 10 runs in a half of an inning, in one-third of an inning.
Hey, you know what? He was on the mound in 77 for the last out when Munson made the foul pop up behind the plate. You know, he was the winning – he was on the mound then. So, you know what?
Yep.
Everything balances out, right?
It certainly does. So. This
Tony,
was an absolute joy to spend this hour with you two guys. I really appreciate it.
I want you to tell Tony the Ricky Henderson story real quick.
Which one?
Which is my favorite one of yours. The Ricky Henderson story when he was with the Bears.
That's right.
Well, there's one with Ricky Henderson with the Bears. There's another one where Ricky Henderson was with the Jersey Indians. That one's even better, but, you know.
No, doesn't it all tie into one story?
Well, Ricky Henderson, I used to, when I worked for the Jersey Indians back in the summer of 78 at Roosevelt Stadium, part of my job was every night after the games were over was to drive Ricky Henderson, Mike Norris, Ray Cozy, and Daryl Woodard in my 1976 AMC Pacer to their house where they lived on Duncan Avenue. Four of them live in an apartment on Duncan Avenue, right off of West Side, and that's where the four of them lived together. And part of my job was after the game was over to drive them home, and I got an additional $50 a week from Charlie Finley personally to make sure that quote, Charlie's boys were taken care of. So I used to have to drive Ricky Henderson home every game in my 1976 AMC Pacer. That's what I had. So now Ricky Henderson comes back to play for the New York Bears, and I'm the PA announcer, and I'm doing the a master of ceremonies for their welcome home luncheon at some restaurant in New York, in Newark, right? And now I'm introducing each member of the team, and they come out and they take a bow, and fans applaud, and I save the best for last. And I said, we are very blessed to have a future Hall of Famer in our midst, somebody who is one of the greatest players in the history of the Major League Baseball, you know, and he's going to join the Bears for this season. Ladies and gentlemen, Ricky Henderson comes out, applauds, blah, 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 stands, takes pictures, signs autographs, whatever, right? And then after it's over, I go up to him, I said, "How you doing, Rick?" And he looks up. He goes, "What's up?" I says, "Do you remember me?" He goes, "Nope." I said, "You remember me at all?
Do I owe you money?"
Right? He goes, "Nope." I said, "Jersey City?" He goes, "Yeah." I said, "Do you remember, you know, anything about me in Jersey City?" He goes, "No." I said, "Okay, well," I said, "when you played in Jersey City, you used to get a ride home after every game?" I said, "Well, I'm the guy who drive you home." And he looked up, and he said, "The bubble car?" And I said, "Yes, that was me, the bubble car."
The bubble?
The bubble car. That's all he remembered. He didn't remember me at all.
He remembered the car.
This is somebody who I had to deal with every single day there, like, you know, like drove him home every game, was with him on the road. I was there when he tried to steal. He was cheating in cards in Holyoke, Massachusetts, playing AC Ducey, pulling from the bottom of the deck. I'm going, "Ricky, I just caught you." I said, "Cut the shit. You can't cheat like that." He goes, "What are you talking about? I'm fucking cheating." I said, "No, you're fucking cheating. You're pulling the cards from the bottom of the deck. Stop. You know, don't do that. Play the game the right way. Right? You're cheating.
Cheat."
As I caught him cheating the cards. Right. Yeah, Ricky Henderson, Baseball Hall of Famer. I caught him cheating in cards in 1978. So, but anyway, he didn't remember me at all for any of those things. Spent the entire summer with him, okay? And he even, which was really nice, okay, when he was going home after the season was over, I drove him back to the airport and took, you know, his luggage, put it in the car, drove him to the airport, and he gave me $100. Now, you know, $100 for a kid in 1978 was a lot of money.
Sure.
So, Ricky thanks you.
Right. Ricky Henderson. And then, incredibly, 1979, he's in the major leagues, and I'm in Marquette. So I told my friends in school, I said, "Guys, I don't know if you're aware, but I got friends of mine that play for the Oakland A's." I said, "Who cares?" I said, "Well, I can get us great tickets to go see the Brewers." "Oh, you can?" "Yeah." "All right, go ahead, get tickets." I called Mike Norris. He said, "No problem. I'll leave you 6. I called Ricky Henderson. He said, "No problem. I'll leave you 6 tickets." I had 12 tickets. The Brewers played the A's for those 3 games that they were there. And I took, like, I don't know, 12, 11 guys from my floor to go see the games. Right? That was 1979.
Cool.
1980, I'm at Marquette again. Ricky Henderson steals 130 bases. Mike Norris wins 22 games, and now I got everybody and their mother calling me, and the Brewers
calling
you
for tickets.
The Brewers played the A's in the playoffs, and I got everybody and their mother calling me to see if they can get me tickets. You know.
Right. Now, good. These are great memories. These are great memories.
Yeah. Right. So I have long memories of Ricky Henderson, but it doesn't surprise me that he didn't remember me, because you know the story about Henderson, right? He said when he got traded to the Mets or signed with the Mets, he's now taking batting practice and said, "You wear your helmet out onto the field?" And he said, "That's Olerud." And Olerud says, "Yeah, I've always done that." And he goes, "Funny." He goes, "I played with a guy in Toronto who used to do the same thing." He goes, "Yeah."
Oh, God. He doesn't remember people, huh?
He didn't remember John Olerud, so I shouldn't feel bad that he didn't remember me.
He didn't remember Olerud. I played with a guy in Toronto who did the same thing.
He didn't know who that was.
Oh, boy.
All right, boys.
I remember.
This was a great, great Frank phone call. I'm glad I got to share it with both of you. Thank you so very much. I hope there are other people that were listening.
So do I.
Hey, Jim.
And Ricky Henderson stories.
Jim, this was fun. I appreciated this time. George, thanks. And
You're welcome, Coach.
God bless you guys.
Same to you, Tony. And, and you know what?
Thank
Keep
you, Coach.
Taking pucks in the face. Keep taking pucks in the face.
I will. It's
All right.
the only way I want to die, unless I get hit in the head with a baseball. As the
no,
only way
no,
to go,
I'm thinking it's more going to be like a puck. I think it's a puck. You know, All right,
okay.
guys. Great talking to you both. We'll talk to you soon.
Night, Jimmy.
God bless you guys,
right,
man. Thanks.
Oh, God. If there's any better
You there, George?
Yeah, I'm here, Coach.
Oh, I was just saying good night, man.
Oh, Coach, it was a pleasure having you.
This was fun. that was fun. All right, we'll try to do it again.
I love it when Jimmy calls. Oh, yeah, and I love the most when Jimmy calls it because Jimmy has so many stories. And he can talk about – he's unlike
well,
Chris
yeah,
Francesa, who can't talk about anything. Jimmy can talk about everything, and it's so funny.
Right, right. Well, Jim's been around. He's been – you know, he's met a lot of people. And that's a funny story on Ricky Henderson, you know.
I remember
that's a funny
there was
story.
A time we were – when he was with the Bears, I have two for you. There was one, we're driving down 21, and we see him in the bullpen, and he just pulls it out and starts peeing in the bullpen.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Chasing 21. He's
oh,
like,
my God.
So we went to the game the next day. We're like, hey, Ricky, you know, you probably shouldn't be peeing facing 21. I don't think anybody could see me. Ricky, we all
didn't think anyone could see me. Oh, Jesus
then,
Christ.
That same night, we did Dizzy Bat on the field. Ricky's come, you know, they bring you through the dugout and they bring you off the field. And Ricky goes, Ricky enjoyed that. I like that. Ricky liked that very much. You know, you people spin around and you head on the field. How'd that feel? Good, Ricky. Why? It looked funny. Ricky liked it. I was like, holy gee. It's like everything you heard about Ricky Henderson was true in that one split moment.
Well, yeah. Well, hey, good. Some good memories, some not so good, but, you know, a lot of good stories, kid.
Yeah. Hey,
listen, this was a long day, but
yes,
ended
Coach.
The day great.
Yes, sir, Coach.
Huh?
It was good having you on. It was great having
you
on.
Oh, thanks for having me. This was fun.
We'll
reminisce some more. We'll do it.
All right,
we'll
Coach.
Do it, kid. All right, I'll catch up to you.
Later,
Later
Coach.
Brother. Okay, kid.
Bye. All right. I think that's enough for tonight. You guys got your fill. Night, everybody.